15th, 2013. This is Spengola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spengola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this website or for this program, go to spengola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to spengola1@yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spengola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. And justice, and then the numeral four, justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. He is the author, translator, the editor, translator, and producer of the film Hitler's War, What the Historians Neglect to Mention. And hopefully most of our listeners have watched that wonderful, wonderful film. Welcome to the program, Wayne.
Einen wunderschönen guten Tag, Frau Spengola. Good day to you, ma'am. Nice to be with you again.
Well, thank you. I wasn't sure when I said guten Tag via Skype that I was actually saying good morning or good afternoon.
Yeah, that's good day. Good morning is guten Morgen. And, yeah.
I thought it was morning, yeah. Okay. Good. All righty. Well, I really appreciate you being on the program, and we're going to talk about World War II, some of the incidences in World War II, and I think that in order to understand what is going on today, it's essential that people understand history. And so today you're going to enlighten us as to what actually happened and who started the war.
Well, we'll try. Let me just get a few of my standard disclaimers out of the way before we commence here, because some people will be curious as to why, you know, I'm not using my real full name here, and I do that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I am German. I live in Canada. I may sound perfectly Canadian, but I am actually German, and I am subject to German laws. And in Germany, it is absolutely verboten to question anything to do with World War II. One is to accept the official version as it is and never question anything about it. Okay. I'm also subject to certain laws here in Canada. So there is a certain topic that begins with the letter H, which I will not discuss. because even telling the truth up here in Canada is no defense. The other thing is that it is a touchy subject, talking about some of the things that I get into. And people are can be pretty fanatical and pretty nasty. And so I do try to, protect my family members, from any potential harassment for anything that I do. I'm not a historian. I am an independent researcher and activist. I've been active on many different issues over the years. And, this is just something that, is a topic that has been close to my heart since I was a child. And I've come back to it now, and this is the primary thing that I do now is researching the real history of World War II and Hitler and National Socialism and trying to share that with the world.
Great, We appreciate that very, very much. All righty, we are going to go to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Deanna, and our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. Alrighty, take her away, Wayne.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago, I posted an article on my blog. It's called Hitler's Declaration of War Against Stalin in 1941. Who was the real villain? And within this blog post, I've included a video which features Viktor Suvorov giving his presentation to the United States Naval Academy concerning his research into what really led up to World War II, in particular the Hitler's attack on the Soviet Union. And where he demonstrates that Stalin was building up his forces to the east of Hitler, while Hitler was very much busy in the west fighting with Britain and France and so on, and that he was amassing his forces and preparing to probably attack Germany from the east, and. And he does a very good job of that, and he has his book Icebreaker. So I've included that in my blog post. You'll also find there's a podcast by Mark Weber of the IHR.
Yeah, I listened to that this morning. It was very good.
So all of that is really good information. But I have this document that I got through a friend of a friend in Germany. It was the first I had ever seen it, ever come across it. This person found it, I guess, in the archives in Germany, copied it, the original German, and uploaded it to archive.org. And then I guess he and some of his own colleagues translated it into English, which is just wonderful. And so you'll find a link to this entire booklet. It's not just a speech. There's a speech by Hitler included in it. And but also a lot of documents, top secret documents, or what were at that time top secret documents that were given to Hitler regarding what Stalin was actually doing, what the Soviets were actually doing, beginning practically from the time that they first signed their mutual non-aggression treaty.
And that was on August 23rd of 1939. Just
correct, yeah. And I guess, you know, the thing. First of all, the document is called Adolf Hitler's Declaration of War Against the Soviet Union in 1941. And yes, that's important to know because it was, you know, about a month before, or several weeks before, Hitler actually attacked Poland. And in signing that agreement, he was able to ensure for himself that, he wasn't going to be surrounded immediately by everybody, that he did at least, have a free hand. He knew he wasn't going to be attacked by the Soviets. And of course, that's a whole another history. We're not going to go into all of that today. But, you know, that was one of the reasons why, you know, he wanted to do this. So, let's see here. The booklet, like I said, it was discovered by this person in Germany and is, you know, available. He's made it available for free on archive.org. It's about 85 or 88 pages, I believe.
88, yeah.
Yeah. And so it will take you, you know, a few hours to get through that. Actually, I spent last night just reformatting that whole thing, and I'm going to link that on my site too. I'll put a different version up there that's easier to read and easier to print out.
Oh, okay. Because yeah. I already had that, but I downloaded your copy, and I think it's the exact same one that I have.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll add that a little bit later on today, it's a lot easier to read and you can print it out, and it's, I think it's only about 50 pages instead of 88.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyways, it begins with Hitler's speech that he made to the German people regarding his reasons for deciding to go to war against the Soviet Union. And so it's quite long, that speech. So I'm going to give you kind of a synopsis, and then I'm going to quote for you some of the more salient points. Now, he begins by going through, you know, some of the history of First World War, and and the policies of encirclement of the Allies and their goals to destroy Germany and to keep her down and enslaved and to prevent her from rising up again. He spoke of German-Soviet relations and of their plans and efforts, the plans and the efforts of the Bolsheviks to foment revolution throughout Europe. He spoke of Churchill stating in 1936 that Germany was becoming too powerful and how by 1939 the British government were seeking to complete the encirclement of Germany again. He spoke of the lies of that were being broadcast by the British government, that Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, Finland, Bessarabia, and the Ukraine were being directly threatened by Germany, which is a lie, and how he publicly was countering those statements, and also how he sought to set the Russians at ease about Germany's true intentions and what Germany's real interests were. And, you know, trying to come to an understanding with them in good faith and, for the purpose of detente, really. You know, he was never, he was always at war, you know, from his early days, with Bolshevism, right from the get-go in the 20s. So, I'm sure it was not an easy decision for him to make to try and come to a pact with them. But on the other hand, I don't think he saw that he had much choice but to try and prevent war. And indeed, this is what he said. He felt it would be in Germany's long-term interest to come to try and come to an understanding with the Soviets and have a mutual non-aggression pact. He was always at odds with Bolshevism, but he knew that there would be, you know, some cost of sacrifices in making a deal with them. But he felt that ultimately it was preferable to going to war with the Soviets. And he knew that, you know, if that ever happened, it would be a long and bloody battle. And he really wanted to avoid that at all cost. The other reason was the policies and actions, of Britain. And he said, and I quote here, a special agreement was concluded in case Britain were to succeed in inciting Poland actually to go to war with Germany. And that, of course, they did. And because of the pact with the Soviets, Germany was able to respond militarily and decisively, although without the Russians' help. And Suvorov goes into that as well, too, that they were really supposed to be there with the Germans fighting against Poland, and they didn't show up. They had everything there, but they didn't join the battle. It was Germany alone. So,
just a quick observation about encirclement. And you can just answer yes or no. Do you find that it's very interesting that that the United States military and Britain are now encircling Iran with all of these bases? I mean, if you look at a map, you can see all the bases, and they're building the same kind of circle around Iran.
Certainly. And Syria too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the same. It's the same thing over and over. We
right.
Definitely, the parallels are very, very similar, for
right.
certain. Yeah. Anyways, where was I here? Well, Hitler, he said that from the outset, he went on to say that, you know, even though he'd signed this agreement with the Soviets, that, you know, from the outset, the Soviets began to increase their demands and to violate the terms. And Hitler, he was actually bound to silence on some of the things that the Soviets were doing. And he remained silent on some of these things for quite a while. But the Germans, you know, I mean, they were not stupid. I guess Stalin kind of played them for stupid. And but they were watching very closely everything that the Soviets were doing. And he said after defeating Poland, he again, you know, he sought peace with Britain, and you know, and Britain again refused. And Hitler said here, I'm quoting here again, the reason for such a refusal was to be found in the fact that Britain still had hopes of being able to mobilize a European coalition against Germany, which was to include the Balkans and Soviet Russia. He spoke, and quote there, he spoke of the British as early as 1940 were trying to cut a deal with the Soviets. and to develop relations in a pro-British direction. And then he spoke of Soviet actions to subjugate Finland and the Baltics by force, and how they began to amass troops in the areas to the east where Hitler had withdrawn his forces as part of the pact he had made, and in a manner and they were amassing these troops in a manner which could only be construed as a threat to Germany. So I'm going to quote a larger section here from Adolf Hitler, where he's saying, while our soldiers from the 10th of May 1940 onwards had been breaking the power of France and Britain in the West, the Russian military deployment on our eastern frontier was being continued to a more and more menacing extent. From August 1940 onwards, I therefore considered it to be in the interest of the Reich to no longer permit our eastern provinces, and moreover had already been laid waste so often, to remain unprotected in the face of tremendous concentration of Bolshevik troops or divisions. Okay, we'll pick it up.
All right. Be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. And I note that you have Veronica Clark's new book listed on your website, so I hope people will look at that. They can get it at Amazon, and it's quite reasonably priced.
Yeah, in fact, yeah. If on the top of my blog, there's a link section at the top there, and I have my own Amazon book and DVD store, and you'll find Deanna Spingola's great books, as well as those by Veronica Clark and quite a few others. I think I've got 105 different titles there to choose from now. So,
okay,
yeah.
And tell us a little bit about how that works. People can go to your site and order their books. They get them at the same price they would at Amazon. But it just gives you a bit of a commission on each book, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so, okay, I was hearing the music coming back
me
in there.
Too.
All right.
What's going on?
I kept going
background.
Through a break here again. Alrighty, so okay, so back in August of 1940, as I said, he was starting to recognize a pattern there going on in the East, and he said, you know, this is something that, you know, we've seen before, and he didn't want to leave the eastern provinces exposed and be overrun as they had been in previous wars. So I'll carry on with this quote here from him. He says, "Thus there was produced the effect which was the object of British and Soviet Russian cooperation, namely the compulsory maintenance of such powerful German forces in the East that a radical conclusion of the war in the West, particularly as regards aircraft, could no longer be vouched for by the German high command. This, however, was in line with the objects not only of British but also of Soviet-Russian policy, for both Britain and Soviet Russia intend to let this war go on for as long as possible in order to weaken the whole of Europe and render it still more helpless."
Nice so, people, those Brits.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, Hitler essentially did, you know, in my opinion, make a deal with the devil in coming to this agreement with Stalin, but he really didn't have a choice, you know, but to give it a shot at that point in time.
Certainly didn't take the Soviets long to show their true colors.
No, not in the least. Not in the least. Hitler, he went on in his speech here, he went on to talk about Soviet aggression towards Romania and how he had to let that slide in the interest of peace. And he spoke about, now the British were coming into the picture. He spoke about the Greece-British connection and how this also threatened the peace in that region. around the Balkans, as did the Soviet actions in the Balkans. With the increasing mobilization of Soviet troops there, and he called the Soviet ambassador Molotov in for discussions and to get clarification. He was getting very worried about all this, and so he went on to say here, and I'll quote this from him as well. He spoke of renewed reinforcement of the concentrations of Russian troops on Germany's eastern frontier, and how tank units and parachutists were transferred in continually in increasing numbers to a dangerous proximity to the German frontier. The German armed forces and the German nation know that until a few weeks ago, not a single German tank or mechanized division was stationed on our eastern frontier. Had any final proof been required for the coalition, which had meanwhile been formed between Great Britain and the Soviet Union or Soviet Russia, in spite of all diversions and camouflage, then it was provided by the Yugoslav conflict. So, you know, he was, waging war, to the West, with Britain and France and some of their allies. And, he pretty much left the East exposed, thinking he had his back covered by Stalin, and Stalin was sticking him in the back, basically.
Right. And actually, the only reason he was at war with Britain and France is because they declared war on him after he went into Poland. They should have just, stayed out of that, because he actually had some issues with Poland.
Right, and, which he had solved, which he had attempted to solve for many years peacefully through all peaceful means, and trying to bring, the British and the French into that to try and resolve it without war. That's, and I should might insert this too, that I came across a clip recently. I've got my own YouTube channel there. You can also find a clip that I posted where this was from, I think, 1935. Marshal Pilsudski had actually been on very good terms with Hitler and vice versa, and they were working together towards a peaceful solution to their problems. However, Pilsudski died in 1935 suddenly. And things kind of downhill.
Huh. Did he commit suicide by shooting himself in the back or some such thing? Alrighty, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Alrighty, we are back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Wayne from Canada. The website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. And we do have one question from the chat room. Excuse me. If Hitler was so afraid of the Soviet Union, why did he remove the natural barrier between them? I mean, if he could have not attacked Poland, how would the Soviet Union have invaded Europe and Germany? And I think the answer to that would be that there were reasons for going into Poland. And, of course, I don't think that he anticipated that, the results of doing that.
Yeah, I have to concur with you there. I mean, you have to always remember that Hitler did not want war with anybody, period. Okay, that's that. He said that over and over and over again in many of his speeches, and you can look on my blog, go through the link section in there, and you'll find many documents that pertain to that fact. That was the last thing he wanted, and the conflict with Poland. As I was saying, Marshal Pilsudski, he'd been working with him, trying to iron out their differences. He respected the man, and vice versa. And in 1935, he unfortunately passed away. And I don't know all the details of that, but it would be interesting to look into that, I suppose. Because right after he passed away, his successor was very anti-German and very belligerent towards Germany. But in this is what I was alluding to earlier. It's just a short YouTube clip, and it was broadcast in Germany. to the public there of the passing of Marshal Pilsudski, and they gave honor and tribute to him in the Reichstag, and gave him, I think, a moment's silence as well, and expressed their condolences to the Polish people. So, you know, there was no, you know, it wasn't Germany that was being anti-Polish and had any desire for a war with Poland. And it only became necessary with the increasing belligerence of Poland, which was, and they were being aided and abetted by Britain in particular, who were, causing them to be belligerent.
And also William C. Bullitt was the ambassador, Roosevelt's ambassador at large in Europe. And he was making deals behind the scenes with the Polish government and trying to provoke a war as well as Britain. Both Britain and the United States.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have mattered what country was there. They were going to get something going. And of course, we also have to realize the population composition in Poland that kind of contributed to the whole situation.
Absolutely. And again, you know, check out my YouTube channel. I've got I've posted a number of different speeches by Adolf Hitler on there recently, which deal with the Polish issue and Britain, and listen to what he has to say about the Bromberg massacres and so on. And you'll see, you know, some of the pictures of that as well, things that led, you know, Hitler to, you know, have to confront Poland because nothing was happening and the world was just ignoring all of these things that were going on. But anyways, we're kind of digressing there. Let me get back to, where was I here? Yeah. Okay. So I just finished quoting part of his speech there, and I wanted to skip ahead, and we'll get to the real meat of this thing soon here. He was saying, he spoke more about on the Soviet efforts to destabilize Romania and to overthrow the government there in a coup d'etat, and that really made him nervous. He then went on to state the following, and this is a quite lengthy, I think this is actually a long segment that we've got here too, so this should work well. But this is a quite lengthy quote that I want to share with the audience because this is really the crux of the matter. And he says here, immediately after the failure of this undertaking, a renewed reinforcement of the concentration of Russian troops on Germany's eastern frontier took place. Tank units and parachutists were transferred in continually increasing numbers to a dangerous proximity to the German frontier. The German armed forces and the German nation know that until a few weeks ago, not a single German tank or mechanized division was stationed on our eastern front. Had any final proof been required for the coalition, which had meanwhile been formed between Britain, Great Britain, and Soviet Russia, in spite of all the diversions camouflaged, then it was provided by the Yugoslav conflict. Whilst I made every effort to undertake a final attempt to pacify the Balkans and in close cooperation with the Duce, Mussolini, I invited Yugoslavia to join the tripartite pact. Britain and the Soviet Union in a joint conspiracy organized that coup d'etat which removed in one night the government of that time, who had been ready to come to an agreement. For we can today inform the German nation that the Serbian putsch against Germany did not take place merely under British, but primarily under Soviet-Russian auspices. As we remained silent on this matter also, the Soviet leaders now went still one step further. They not only organized the putsch, but a few days later also concluded that well-known friendly agreement with their new subservient vassals, which was intended to strengthen the Serbs in their desire to resist the pacification of the Balkans and to incite them against Germany. And this was no platonic intention. Moscow demanded the mobilization of the Serbian army. Since even now, I still believed believed it to be better not to speak, those in power in the Kremlin went still one step further. The government of the German Reich today possesses documentary evidence which proves that Russia, in order finally to bring Serbia into the war against Germany, gave her a promise to supply her via Salonika with arms, aircraft, munitions, and other war materials. And this happened at almost the very moment when I myself, this is Hitler speaking, advised the Japanese foreign minister, Dr. Matsuka, to ease the tension with Russia, hoping as I did thus to serve the cause of peace. Only the rapid advance of our incomparable divisions to Skopje, as well as the capture of Salonika itself, frustrated the aims of the Soviet-Russian-Anglo-Saxon plot. The officers of the Serbian Air Force, however, fled straight to Russia and were there immediately received as allies. It was the victory of the Axis powers in the Balkans alone, which in the first instance thwarted the plan to involve Germany in fighting in southeastern Europe, lasting for months throughout the summer, while in the meantime steadily completing the concentration of the Soviet-Russian armies and increasing their readiness for war, in order finally, together with Britain and supported by the American supplies anticipated, to throttle and crush the German Reich and Italy. Thus, Moscow not only broke, but miserably betrayed the stipulations of our friendly agreement. All this was done whilst the rulers in the Kremlin, exactly as they had done in the case of Finland and Romania, up to the last moment, put up a show of peace and friendship and drew up ostensibly innocent dementes, which is a French word meaning an official denial by a government of their actions or aims. Although up till now I have been forced by circumstances to keep silent again and again, the moment has now come when to continue as a mere observer would now only be a sin of omission and a crime against the German people and even against the whole of Europe. Today, something like 160 Russian divisions are facing our frontiers. For weeks, constant violations of this frontier have been taking place, not only into our country, but from that, but from the far north down to Romania. Russian airmen consider it a sport now, simply and nonchalantly, to overlook these frontiers, presumably in order to prove to us that they already feel themselves masters of these territories. And then he goes on to say, in the night from the 17th to the 18th of June, Russian reconnaissance parties again penetrated into Reich territory and could only be driven back after prolonged firing. This has brought us to the hour when it is necessary for us to take steps against this plot devised by Jewish Anglo-Saxon warmongers and the equally Jewish rulers of the Bolshevik headquarters in Moscow. And the last part he says here, German people, at this very hour, a movement of troops is taking place which, in its extent and magnitude, is the greatest that the world has ever seen. United with their Finnish comrades, the soldiers who gained the victory at Narvik, talking about his own forces, are manning the shores of the Arctic Ocean. German divisions, commanded by the conqueror of Norway, together with the champions of Finnish liberty, commanded by their marshal, are protecting Finnish territory. From East Prussia down to the Carpathians, there stretch the formations of the German Eastern Front. Along the shores of the Pruth, along the lower reaches of the Danube, down to the shores of the Black Sea, German and Romanian soldiers are united under the Romanian chief of state, General Antonescu. The task of this front is thus no longer the protection of individual countries, but the safety of Europe and the salvation of us all. I have therefore decided today to entrust the fate and the future of the German Reich and our people once more to the hands of our soldiers. May God, our Lord, aid us in this and of all of our aid us in this of all struggles. So that's the end
And that was on June 22nd, 1941.
Right. Yeah. So, so he's not just blowing smoke here. And you know, he's not just making these things up. He's basing all of this on these intelligence reports, which are attached to this document, which you can read from yourself from a variety of different sources. And these include from Alfred Jodl, from Field Marshal Keitel, Heinrich Himmler, and of course Reinhard Heydrich, and these are reports that are talking not only of what was happening on the eastern frontier, but also they were watching the Soviets all along and their activities within Germany, also within France, and the international Comintern, and all of their malfeasance, all of their deceptions, espionage, and the sabotage that they were creating everywhere, as well as their, their naked aggression that he spoke of on the Eastern Front. So they were attacking Germany. So it wasn't a matter of, Hitler being the aggressor here whatsoever, was it? He was responding to what was happening. And as if you watch the video that's also on my YouTube channel, and I've got it embedded in that post as well by Suvarov, he shows, the massive buildup of troops that was going on at that time and how these were, intended for offensive purposes, not defense by any means.
Right.
And that was one of the reasons also why Hitler was so successful in turning them back to capturing them when he caught them off guard. They weren't in a defensive posture at all.
No, they didn't set up their country to be defensive at all, as far as the military logistics that one has to have if they're actually going to defend their country.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So... So we see again, just as with, the situation with Poland, and of course, I hope that people have watched the film, Hitler's War, what the historians neglect to mention. A lot of this is covered in there as well. But this particular aspect was not covered that extensively. So I'm happy to have come across this document to be able to bring that to the world's attention. And if we've got time, I guess I could go into reading from some of these reports here of the buildup.
Let's answer a question from the chat room. Wouldn't it be more productive to talk more about the history of the British colony called the United States? But I think so. Go ahead, answer that question.
Well, the United States is not really, it's not my issue. And I can't speak to that. Yeah. I'm speaking as a German about, what has happened to my people, my nation.
And, sure.
Yeah. I can't really address that.
But, let me answer the question. Essentially what happened to Germany has already happened to some extent in this country during the Depression. We had a depression that was imposed upon us, at about the same time or just shortly after. There was a big inflationary period in Germany. And I think that we have talked quite a lot about the United States and the United States military, which, by the way, the World War II then put the U.S. military in charge of being the military force for the entire world. And it happened as a result of World War II, when they really took over from Britain. So I just love history. I think it's important to talk about warfare, because warfare, so many things happen during warfare. During warfare, you kill a massive amount of people. You shift money up to the international Jewish interests. They control a lot of the ammunition, a lot of the companies that make ammunition. And during war, they impose a lot of tyrannical kinds of legislation before, during, and after. So it's important to talk about war. So that's my answer to it. But we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. All righty, welcome back. Our guest today is Wayne from Canada. This is Deanna. And somebody in the chat room wants to know, are you, and you mentioned this, are you a German national, which apparently would mean, do you have a passport there, or...
I have
citizenship.
Yes, and I have lived over in Germany for many years as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I am also I consider myself a citizen of the German Reich, which did not cease to exist after the capitulation of German forces in World
War
II.
You're right. Yes,
yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. One thing that we, I haven't touched on here, and is the role of Roosevelt, and that's going to be the subject of my next blog post. He was America was officially neutral through all of this up to this point, and but he was secretly behind the scenes doing all he could to supply Britain and the Soviets, working directly with them, making Stalin look like the good guy, Uncle Joe over there, and he was supplying them the whole while claiming to be neutral, and doing all he could to thwart German efforts everywhere else as well. So that's something that, like I say, that's going to be posting on that very soon. I've been sitting on that for a while. A few things I wanted to add to it, but I do get pretty busy. You can contact me through my blog if you wish. There's email there, or you can comment on some of my posts. The other way you can contact me is through Facebook, and Facebook just takes up a lot of my time. I had a lot of problems. I think I mentioned that to you last time we spoke too, that, they blocked my account. They did not want me talking about a lot of these things, I guess, on there. And I have managed to gain back control of my main YouTube account, and been making many, 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 many new friends on there. And there's a lot of discussions going on my things that I post on. I have actually two accounts. I do use another account. They're a fictitious name, Martin Mueller. That was my backup plan when they blocked my other account. So you always have to have backup plans for these people who don't like the truth. And hundreds of friends have joined me there. A lot of people are sharing this, beginning to share this information. And I do get bombarded, however, with a lot of personal messages and questions and so on. And it really does take up a lot of my time. So I apologize if you have emailed me and I haven't gotten back to you. It just seems like every time I turn around, my inbox is getting hammered again. So, yeah, but you can, by all means, contact me through the website or join me on Facebook.
Right. You have a whole new, can we say, occupation or avocation in what you're doing? I mean, probably 10 hours a day doing what you do, right?
Oh, sometimes much more than that, yeah.
Okay. Well, good for you, and thank you for doing that. We do have to take our 60-second top of the hour break. We'll be right back after a station ID. Welcome back. This is Deanna. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. That is justice, the numeral 4, Germans.wordpress.com. If you'd like to visit the chat room, you can go to spingola.chatango.com. All righty. And if you would like to call in with a question or a comment, please call 800-313-9443.
Deanna, I was just thinking to I've had a YouTube channel of my own that covered a lot of different topics, but a couple of weeks ago I decided, you know, for this particular issue, I'm going to start my own YouTube channel. So you can just look for that. There's a YouTube banner on the top of my page now on the right hand side to check out what I've posted there, and I've got others that I plan to be uploading soon. And there's a few other projects I'm trying to get some work done. It's been hard because I said this whole business with Facebook and so on, social networking. I'm on a couple of different sites, and it's been very time consuming. I have a couple of other video projects that I want to get busy on. In fact, one I am working on right now. And by that I mean translating the text from German into English, and then I plan to do narrate that as well. This is now 3 or 4 different films on my list to do. That's extremely time consuming. The blog I've slowed down a bit recently. I posted 55 posts in the first 3 months of it, and so I've slowed down a little bit now, and I am looking for other contributors, and I do believe I have one of my friends in Germany now, or at least I shouldn't say in Germany, but another German national who is interested in helping me out to post some stories on there as well, and he's done a lot of great research.
Right.
So, yeah.
A word about you're being really, really busy. I think it's important to keep in mind that there are people who are actually paid to go to certain websites, certain Facebook pages, certain forums, just to post things that will distract people.
Oh, indeed.
Cause
yeah.
Problems. And I'm sure that you're the target of a lot of that.
Well, yeah, I do have to question sometimes. So I see a lot of things going on sometimes, and sometimes it's just that people are they're really not as that well informed, or they have other agendas. Now, you know, I try to make it clear to people. Look, you know, I have what my agenda is, and I'm not, you know, people. I get a lot of people coming to me because they say, well, you're supporting Hitler or something, you know, you must be a neo-Nazi, and I'm not. Or they assume, you must be one of these white nationalists. I'm not. You must be a this, you must be a that. No, I have my own agenda, which I try to make very clear. It's just trying to correct the historical record of what happened with World War II, and trying to get people to understand what really happened, and for the purpose of you're trying to bring back, honor to my people who have been maligned through all these huge monstrous lies for years about what happened there. And Germany to this day is an occupied country.
Without a constitution.
Right. Yeah.
All righty. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. Can we take a call from a fellow countryman of yours, also from Germany?
Yeah, we'll do that. Let me just finish up with the one point we were talking about with Facebook and so on. And I do want to say that, you know, in spite of, I do get some of these characters, provocateurs, trolls, and so on that you spoke of. I do get some of that going on for certain, and they do tie up my time, and waste a lot of my energy. It's really annoying.
Deliberate.
However, I must say that, you know, more and more people are flocking to me and are listening, and beginning to share this information. you know, they're taking the risk. They're going out there, putting it on their own, on their own Facebook walls and so on. And then unfortunately, they don't have all the facts. They don't know everything. So they're coming back to me. How do I deal with this? What do I say to that? You know, that sort of thing. So that becomes really time consuming for me. Sure. But I do want to say to those people, my God, I thank you for real, you know, for looking at, for having the courage to look at this, because it has been so taboo for so long, and we've all been inundated with so much propaganda over the years, you know, and people are finally starting to see it. There is an awakening taking place. People are starting to see it, and they're going, oh my God, we have been really duped on this one, haven't we?
And they're taking the risk.
Yeah. But I think, you know, this one is so huge. But they're starting to see the pattern that goes all the way back to World War II. When they look at, you know, there, I have people from who are, I have people who are Muslims and Arabs and so on my Facebook, friends list as well, you know, who see what's going on in Palestine, you see what's going on in Syria, see what's going on in Iran and so forth. Well, a lot of those people are now, starting to see that pattern as well, that goes back to World War II. They're doing the same thing over and over and over again, you know, so it's relevant not only to my people, but it's relevant to today, to things that are going on. And if we really want to, you know, and this has been always been, you know, the main focus of my activism is peace, you know, and I've been involved with 9/11 truth and all kinds of different things, but my main thing has always been peace and wanting to have a better world for us all here, you know. And so it's really essential to understand this history and the, if we want to have peace in this world, then we've got to go back and look at this pattern that continues on to this day. Right. Okay, so with that, I guess we can go ahead and take a call.
All righty, let's take Werner from New Brunswick. Werner, welcome to the program.
Good. Yeah, good afternoon, Dan, and good afternoon, Ray.
Guten Tag, Werner.
Yeah, the last word you said is you want peace. And this is what so many people in North America don't understand. You can build peace on lies.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, you know, I've been doing quite a bit of research lately thanks to the internet and original archives. And this is what I want to always admonish the listeners. Go back to the original archives. They are now, most of them, they're available now on the internet. You know, before any kind of a media whore or political whore or whoever got some kind of a special agenda can put their own spin on it. And early in the program, Wayne, when you mentioned there about what started out the war with Poland and with the Sudetenland, as I say, in this documentary, The Greatest Story Never Told.
Yes.
And I found it a wealth of information, and it wasn't just only from the German side, but the original footage, you know, from all sides. And I would say what I've seen so far on the internet is one of the most comprehensive ways, you know, of recording of the real facts. And this is what people in North America and in the countries, in the Allied countries, didn't understand, you know, what has led to the war with Poland.
Right.
58,000 Germans that were living in the area that after the First World War had been given to Poland, you know, they had been slaughtered, they had been butchered, the communist agitators, you know, coming from the Soviet Union. They had infiltrated and they had stirred up the population in the Eastern European countries. And their goal was, you know, world, and anybody who knows about the communists, their goal has been all along world revolution. You know, they wanted the whole world to become communists, you know. Mm-hmm. And they had instigated those horrible atrocities against the German people there in Western Poland. And in Sudetenland. And what kind of a leader can that allow to go on? There are the Western nations, the so-called NATO nations, you know, they go to war on a lot more trivial or a lot smaller issues, you know?
Yes, indeed.
Anyway, look, as I say, it's not all the Jewish people. You know, the Jewish people as a whole, they make out about 1% of the world population. But among them, it's only a small fraction that are real the instigators. And when they were talking always about the axis of evil, you know, what I can see, you know, from doing quite a bit of research, the axis of evil was London and New York. And it was the money controllers, you know. But they were being controlled. Money was just only part of the agenda. But I say, you know, where do the rats gather, you know, where the most feet is for them. And those are here, as I say, the International Criminal Banking Consortium. The most feet is at the financial centers of the world, you know. And that has been for the last over 100 years. It has been at first London and then New York.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And there is another speech that will be of interest. The speech Benjamin Friedman gave in 1961 at the Willard Hotel. You know, Benjamin Friedman, the name is Jewish, but he said it, you know, he didn't seem to belong to the criminal cabal. And what is the slogan of the Mossad? By deceit we will wage war. So
right.
How else can such a small minority gain such a power over the whole planet unless they do it by deceit?
Well, yes, and by gaining control of the media, first and foremost.
Yeah, the media is one of the heads of the Hydra. And those media whores, you know, they have so much blood hanging on their pens and on their movies, media they've created, you know, it's unbelievable, you know. How can they rest? How can they sleep at night? But here it comes in another aspect, and that is the population, especially in North America, you know. People have been brainwashed for over 100 years, you know. We are the good guys, you know. But now when more and more of the real history comes out, the real information, most of the people, they don't have the courage to admit that they have been wrong. And they don't want to get off their soapbox.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. And this points that those people, they don't have very high human qualities.
Well, you know, I think it's also, you know, that, you know, people say, oh, but my dad or my uncle or my grandfather fought in that war and he was doing the right thing. And, you know, so, you know, how dare you question that, you know? And of course they went over there to, you know, fight an evil person, an evil tyrant. How dare you say otherwise, you know?
You know, over the last 1500 years, how many times did Germany attack other countries?
Yeah.
How many times did Germany get attacked from the surrounding countries?
Right.
And a few times, nearly the population got wiped out.
Yeah.
But because
they were always fomenting internal divisions in Germany as well, to keep Germany down, keep Germany divided. You know, that went on for hundreds of years. Primarily from the French, but then towards the end of the 18th century, or the 19th century, I should say, it was the British, you know, trying to keep Germany down,
right? Do the British have? When I look at the history of the British Empire over the last 400 years, it has been a criminal empire on amok. Running amok all around the world. You know, when you're sitting in a glass house, don't throw with stones at the windows in your neighbor's house.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, appreciate your call, Werner. We are coming up on a break here, but thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Werner.
All righty. I want to just say something. The Jewish people do argue amongst themselves. But when it gets right down to it, when they're up against the Christians, the Jews are always going to be united and stick together. That's just the way they are. They've always been very, very united. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, because they will ostracize people in their own community who speaks out, such as David Cole and lots of other people. And I'm sure that Benjamin Friedman was ostracized for standing up for truth. All righty, we will be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. All righty. I think it's kind of interesting that when you think about Germany and you think about some of the things that Hitler did, and one of the things that I don't hear frequently enough, yes, he did do a wonderful thing economically. He restored Germany to almost full employment. Well, basically full employment, and when you compare that to what was going on in this country. But the other thing that he did was that he told the tribe, the Jews, to leave the country. He made it very uncomfortable for them to stay. And no community had kicked them out since 1898, when I believe it was Moscow, the city of Moscow, had a declaration that they were to leave. And that is something that he did. And one of the things that Donald Day in his books says, and I can't quote, I don't have it in front of me, but he says it's really something that two Christian nations, meaning so-called United States and Britain, would fight another Christian nation for kicking out the Bolsheviks or, you know, the communists. Because when you're talking about communism, Judaism is communism and vice versa. And that's what they did. They fought a Christian nation that was trying to protect themselves against economic warfare, against internal strife, and then they had two Christian nations go against them for doing that.
Yeah. Okay, Deanna, you're just breaking up somewhat on my end. Am I coming through okay for you still?
Yes, yes.
Okay, for some reason you were sort of fading in and out there, but Skype is a bit weird sometimes.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, but I did get the gist of what you're saying there and have to concur with you. I just wanted to go back to some of the points that Werner brought up for us here in his book of the film, The Greatest Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. Yeah. And I would recommend that people watch that. I think it's now up to 17 parts or something to that. And it's basically, somebody has taken a lot of parts from many different films, documentaries, and so on, and put this together into kind of build a comprehensive picture of what Hitler was about. I must say, however, that there is some stuff in there that is disinformation as well. It's been quite a while since I've looked at that film. But there were some things in there that I do not agree with too. So
can you point any of them out?
I haven't seen it in quite some time now.
Okay.
But it's just when he mentioned it, I went, oh yeah, right. I did like that, but there were some things about it too. So bear that in mind, and maybe we will discuss that at another point. But in that film, I actually took parts of my film as well and included that in there.
That's important when you're looking at anything, when you're reading any book, that there might be things that are maybe 5% disinformation or something, and so you have to take that into consideration. Whatever you're reading or looking at, you have to be so well educated and do your own research to the point that you can see when somebody's trying to pull the wool over your eyes, or just in ignorance, just are not. It's misinformation in that.
Sure, and I don't want to, you know, criticize that person. I'm sure he's doing his best he could.
Exactly.
But you know, it's just that he did include some of the stuff that is definitely propaganda, and that's really all I have to say about that at the moment.
Right.
Now, Werner also spoke about the atrocities in Poland, and that's included, as I say, in a couple of the clips that I've uploaded recently, which are primarily some of Hitler's speeches with English subtitles. And in a couple of them, you will see some of the many of the photographs of these real atrocities that were taking place against the German ethnic minority in what had become Poland, but was in fact Germany, but was taken away from Germany after World War I and the Treaty of Versailles. Okay, so it's good for people to look at that and to understand, you know, like Hitler could not let that go on. And those crimes were known. You know, they were telling this to the League of Nations. Nobody cared. Nobody listened. You know, we always hear about, you know, oh, the persecution of the Jews here, the persecution of the Jews there. Well, what about the persecution of the Germans that was going on there and in Czechoslovakia? Okay.
Right.
And, you know, and what was this man to do? Just let it continue to go on. He had to do something about that. Okay, I mean, and there was other issues involved there too, but look at those pictures.
And had been for a long time since the Versailles Treaty, since those people gave away all that territory. There had always been problems, economic problems, persecution that Polish government actually sanctioned. All right,
yes.
We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we do have some callers lining up. Our guest today is Wayne from Canada. His website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. Alrighty, Wayne, would you like to take a caller?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure we can.
Alrighty. Let's take Richard from Washington. Richard, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I've recommended Why Nations Fail. I don't know if you've been able to get to it, Deanna, but I recommend it again. And my question is, if we understand what happened to Hitler in Germany, would that prevent Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi from taking place? And my analogy is kind of like a football, or a football game. Once a team becomes number one, that's the person that everybody strives to replace themselves as number one. That's the name of the game of nations. And my question is, you know, if you're for peace, based on the fact that the growth curve is asymptotic, and we've been given a reprieve because of abiotic, but they call it fossil fuels, agriculturally and industrial, are you suggesting like a hunger game scenario or a lottery? How are we going to control population?
Hmm. Well, that's, you know, kind of getting a bit off of what I normally talk about, but I think the world is able to sustain the population that we have, no problem. I think a lot of, you know, shortages are contrived and so on. And crises are artificially created over and over again. I think, listening to Deanna's show, the various topics, the guests that she has on, you know, you see clearly that, you know, a lot of the things that go on in this world are contrived and invented, and they create crises and shortages and all kinds of things. And it's always the same people that are causing these problems and getting us to causing the problems and at the same time giving us false solutions.
Well, isn't that the yeah. example and the lesson of Germany? Hitler motivated the German people to be kind of self-reliant. He allowed them to expand their energy situation in a new way, diesel and the other options that he had for creating power. But in the bottom line is he then became the ongoing force, and the as you say, the I call him the inbreeding sociopathic tribe, determined that he had to be eliminated because of that number one status. I mean, that's the pump and dump that's been going
on.
Yeah,
I don't think it was because, no, I would disagree that it was to do with his status. I think it was you know, simply because he presented a threat to their global empire, to their hegemony. That is the you know, I call them the Judeo financial or bankster gangsters, and the, you know, as Veronica calls them, hyenas of high finance on the one hand, and Judeo-Freemasonic Bolshevik communism on the other. You know, they're behind both sides of that, and the model that he was presenting, when I say that, you always have to bear in mind that National Socialism was not meant for export. It was designed for Germany and Germany alone. Hitler had no intention of forcing it upon anybody else anywhere. He did not want war, did not want to force that upon anybody else. However, it was a comprehensive system of not only governments, but a way of life for the people. And it was based on Christian principles and people helping people, brothers helping brothers, and so on, and brotherly love, and working towards you know, creating a new social state, whereby, you know, people were working for their overall good and then benefiting from that as well. Okay, so he was, and he was cutting out these the bankers. He created his own currency, debt-free currency, and showed that it could be done. They had no gold. They had, you know, did not have a lot of raw materials themselves, and showed that Germany could, you know, prosper, you know, within a few short years. I mean, as Deanna was saying, they had a labor shortage after only a few years, and had to import people to take up some of that slack. So what he was doing was he had created the most prosperous country at the time in the world, and would become the envy of all other nations if he were allowed to succeed, and if the other nations in the media in those other nations were telling the truth, which they weren't. Most people in Britain had no clue as to what was going on in Germany and how good the Germans had it. They were deliberately hiding that from people. They were doing that exact same thing in the United States, and they had the boycott of 1933, worldwide boycott that they started, and of course went on to tell many of these atrocity tales and so on. So, you know, this is the real reason, in my opinion, from about World War II, is that, you know, it wasn't that he was the top dog in the world. He didn't want to be the top dog in the world. He was doing what he had to do for his people, and that's all his concern was for the welfare of his own people.
Well, yeah. That's it. I fully agree with your assessment, especially your assessment of the inbreeding sociopathic tribe running the whole thing, and that's why I recommend Why Nations Fail. But with that assessment, you know, at the point where this country becomes very successful, then what do you do to curb that success? How do you keep that in check? I mean, success can't go unlimited. We're on an infinite planet, or a finite planet with an infinite growth curve. I don't see how you're going to bring those two things together.
Well, that is a theory, Richard, that you're promoting.
Well, there's only other growth curves. This asymptotic is cancer, so you know, I don't know how you can say it's a theory.
Well, I believe that is a theory. Yes, I do.
Well, cancer killed the host, so who's going to kill the planet? I got a feeling it's going to be the humans. And it's been happening on a cyclical basis, forbidden archaeology.
Yeah, I think that they want us to believe these things, and are manipulating us to fight wars, and secretly, I guess they want to reduce our populations and so on. But there is a film I watched years ago now. You can watch for free. It's called now it's Casey something or other, Demographic Winter, I think it's called, something to that effect.
Right. I mean, that's a little bit Darwinian, Richard. Things that you're talking about are Darwinian. And the other thing, Wayne, that you mentioned is that Hitler was not attempting to export his brand of socialism, and it was national socialism, not the socialism that people typically think about.
Right,
not Marxism. I think that many of the things that he did are applicable to the United States economy. For instance, he based the goal that he used was the people. The people were the essential factors within that economic program. He didn't base it on having gold in a bank somewhere, but on the people. Their labor, their produce, what they created. That is what a nation is built upon, not upon speculation and upon credit and upon other things, but upon the product of one's labor. And they proved that it could be done. And if we just took some of that and applied it in this country, there would be a major difference. And some of the other things that he did, too, in the deporting of people who were not citizens. When you think about all of the people in this country who are not citizens but have slipped through the borders illegally and are now being given what do they call that, where the government is trying to say, oh yes, let's go ahead and let them stay here. Well, that is just not right. I'm sorry, it's just not right. You need to the government needs to take care of the citizens that are citizens of the United States and not import or encourage other people to come here when we can't even take care of ourselves because of the outsourcing of labor, the outsourcing or the insourcing of labor and the outsourcing of production. So there are many things that we could learn from Hitler's Germany.
Well, I think the same thing took place with Muammar Gaddafi. He established the same program in his nation, and where is he today? I mean, you know, this seems to be a recurring cycle that we just don't want to come to grips with who's controlling it and what we're going
to
replace them with.
Give up? Are you saying?
No, I play the game within the bounds that I am presented, but I understand that it's a game. It's the Hunger Games. That's where we are, and you have to understand that they're in charge. They've made determinations. Call them whatever you like. Label them if you have to for divide and conquer. But bottom line, you're a free individual to make your choices as long as you have that freedom. If you don't have that freedom, it's all over anyway. You're gone.
Right. Well, you know, and like I say, I mean, you have to look at, you know, Hitler's total economic plan, his total package, and what he did was truly amazing. But he was teaching the people to be, you know, conservative as well, to not waste, to use the land and the resources as effectively and productively as possible. And, he was keeping controls on prices. He was not letting people, gouge. He was not letting the financial, you know, speculation go on anymore. There were stock markets, but he was not allowing, you know, them to manipulate Germany's economy and so forth. In addition to, you know, creating his own currency based on the work and the labor of the people and the production. So it was very much self-sustaining and exports. He kept that to a minimum, only traded what he had to. And a lot of times, because of the boycotts that were going on, you know, they were trading goods and services with some of the nations in South America and so on as well to bring in what they needed.
I can fully appreciate that. I am from German ancestry, and I appreciate that craftsman ethic, and that's what he was developing, was the individual craftsman ethic, and that's been, quote-unquote, after the war, deported to a lot of other countries. But the bottom line is, you know, we still have this who's going to be in control? I mean, people are herd animals now in the situation of the population, and somebody has to be the alpha person. Somebody has to be the person controlling the system, be it Hitler, be it Muammar Gaddafi, be it the inbreeding sociopathic tribe.
No, I think that's what they would like us to believe, that somebody has to be in charge.
And, we demand it. Know, that's what Christianity is all about. We got to have a God. We got to have a pastor. We got to have somebody in charge. Otherwise, we as humans aren't comfortable.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling in, Richard.
You know, I think, you know, you have to look at, you know, a lot of people would like to, you know, make the comparison that, you know, that Europe today, that this was, you know, based on Hitler. It wasn't, you know, Hitler did want to see a new order in Europe. But what he wanted was a Europe that was not being ordered by that tribe.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, but when he did go into these other countries, which he did in self-defense, such as in Holland and Belgium, and so on, he did not go in there and install a Hitler clone, you know, and
right, and that's quite different than the Bolsheviks. They, as soon as they got into a country, they either had somebody already there ready to take over, or they brought somebody in to do that for them.
But, or America, for that matter, with the installing tin pot dictators in places, overthrowing elected governments. And so on, you know, that's gone on for a long time. Hitler was not doing that, you know. But when we look at, you know, Richard, you know, mentioned, Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi and so on. Yeah. You can always argue certain things that Saddam did. However, you know, he was trying to do something for his people as were Gaddafi, and it was very similar. And the model is that they use is that they also go, this is the next Hitler. And my response to that is, and your problem with that is what?
Right.
You know, that's a good thing for those people. If you know, it's a good thing for them. If they know the truth, if you really know the truth, it's not a bad thing at all.
Right. And if more people could understand what Hitler was all about and what Muammar Gaddafi was all about, they would understand that these people were doing what every government should be doing for their people, what our government should be doing for the citizens. And our government is not doing those things, but is doing the exact opposite, because we are an occupied country. Germany is an occupied country. Most of the countries in the world are now occupied by a very, very small minority, and they have a lot of minions running around doing their work. And that, therein, lays the problem.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. You know, the whole you have to look at the whole package deal of what Hitler did, not just the man, and you also have to understand too that, you know, they themselves, the Brits and so on, they said, you know, our issue is not Hitler. You know, he offered to resign, and others even said, look, if we take out Hitler, you know, then this would be over. And they said, no, our problem is with the German people, and with the, you know, we don't want these, you know, we want to get rid of the German people, because, you know, they were productive, hardworking people, and they could impact the world economy, as well, right? And as well as their
for the good.
British Empire. Yeah.
Speaking of the British Empire, Joe said, not even God can trust the British in the dark, in an email. All right, here's a question from Steve. Yesterday I listened to Merlin Miller's program from the previous week, and he claimed that after the night of the long knives that the German working class no longer had a voice at the table. He mentioned Rodney Martin, but I don't think he said Rodney agreed. What do you two think? Now, we did have a program on that. Rodney talked about this some time ago, but we do have a break coming up. Would you like to address that when we come back?
Okay, I'm having a bit of a difficulty hearing you again. So,
okay. Yeah. The night of the long knives?
Yeah.
Do you want to address that?
I can try, yeah.
Okay. We don't have much time after the break, but let's do that. All right. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we have Wayne from Canada, whose website is justiceforgermans.wordpress.com. And, okay, would you like to address the night of the long knives where I believe 83 people were killed?
Yeah, I'm just trying to scan my memory banks on that one. I believe Veronica did quite a good segment on that in one of her books. I can't remember if it was The Hyenas of High Finance or The Union Jackal, but she went into that in quite detail.
pardon me. But it was a group of people that were trying to introduce Marxism and.
I think we're going to be running out of time pretty quickly too. So I guess the thing that people need to understand is that, you know, Hitler was not this big, huge dictator guy, this top down approach. Hitler was more in the middle, and there was a lot of competing interests even within National Socialism. There were people who were more right wing, people who were more left wing, and so on. All, you know, within the realm of National Socialism. And it wasn't just top down Hitler giving orders and everybody else following, and goose stepping along as they would like us to believe. Yeah, there were competing issues, competing factions. And there came a time when Ernst Röhm and his, you know, the SA and so on, they were starting to be, a hindrance. And Hitler was having problems with that group. They basically wanted to do away with the Wehrmacht, and were giving competition to the Wehrmacht. And so there were these internal conflicts going on. And they finally said to Hitler, look, you've got to get rid of this guy. If you need our support and we can't deal with this. Something's got to be done about these guys.
Now, Rodney did cover this on Monday, November 19th of 2012, I believe, according to my notes. And
that sounds familiar too, yeah.
So it's something that we might do a program on in the future, but it's such a lengthy topic to talk about that I doubt that we could do it much justice in the 1 minute that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. But it's an important thing to remember is that, there were many competing factions were happening. And we even see that in the later stages of the war, the different generals and so on, they had their own little agendas going on as well too. And
there were traitors within the NSDAP.
Absolutely. Totally. Yeah.
So.
Anything. Yeah, and I get this question asked a lot too about the Dunkirk. You did such a wonderful job on that of debunking that myth of Hitler deliberately letting the British escape. Totally
Which is
wrong.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Absolutely yeah. ridiculous. There's so many myths going on that you really need to, like with the Night of the Long Knives or Dunkirk or any of those things.
And
or
Gleiwitz.
You have to look into both sides of it and see what it's all about and then draw your own conclusions.
And the same thing with the attack on the Soviet Union.
Exactly.
Look at the big picture.
All righty, we have run out of time. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you for having me again. I appreciate it, Deanna.
All righty. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.